This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
On the program today, manufacturing, computer chips, and global trade. That last one, by the way, way more fun than it sounds. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 24th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with a data point en route to an observation about a slice of this economy that has seen better days. We learned this morning, here's the data point, obviously, that orders for durable goods fell 5% in July, the biggest drop since the early days of the pandemic. Durable goods being big expensive stuff that is supposed to last. Here then is the slice of the economy at issue. Manufacturing in this country has been in the dumps for a while. And if the durable goods order number this morning is any indication, it's going to be a while longer before it bounces back. This is a not unintended consequence of the Fed raising rates, right? Higher interest rates are supposed to cool demand and slow the economy. But as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, there are some signs that manufacturers are adapting.
Argonaut Manufacturing Services in Carlsbad, California, makes pharmaceutical drugs and diagnostic tests. CEO Wayne Woodard and I are looking through a window into a sterile room where a machine is filling glass vials.
We use a lot of automation, as you can see. There's two different robots in there and a whole bunch of other mechanical parts moving the glass around and then filling them.
Argonaut manufactures products for clients, not to sell under its own name. Woodard says business was great early in the pandemic, when a lot of companies shifted to making COVID tests. But more recently, he says his clients have had to pivot back to what they were doing before the pandemic, at a time when interest rates have been rising and banks are more reluctant to make loans.
And they're just finding that that pivot back, which is going to require additional capital, is getting harder to find.
And as Woodard's clients have struggled, so has his company. He's had to make layoffs, though he won't say how many. But he says there are plenty of reasons to believe that business will bounce back. He says COVID taught people that diagnostic tests can be pretty useful.
Now they start thinking about, what other tests could I take at home? Or what other tests could I go to my doctor and get a result very quickly?
So Woodard is expanding. Earlier this year, his company added a new facility. It also bought another automated filling machine that will boost its capacity fourfold.
It's those folks who make the investment in the toughest of times who reap the benefits when business is good again.
Manufacturer Lyman Munson is feeling upbeat about demand, too. His firm S.L. Munson & Company makes metalworking tools in South Carolina, including diamond grinding wheels that are used to make disc brake pads for vehicles. Munson says demand for those tools stayed strong throughout the pandemic because a lot of people bought vehicles.
Every one of them is going to have 8 disc pads on it, and after some number of miles, they're going to need to be replaced.
Munson says before the pandemic, he had to compete with imports that were cheaper than his products. But all of the supply chain congestion during the pandemic taught many of his customers that working with foreign manufacturers can be really slow.
You need to have 6 months lead time for the people offshore to make the product and pack it up and ship it over here and get through the whole supply chain.
The Biden administration has been trying to incentivize manufacturers to rely less on certain Chinese exports, especially sophisticated technology, says Katie Russ, an economics professor at UC Davis.
So that we're sourcing more advanced technology goods from countries we see as friendly and what we call reshoring as well, which would be domestic sources.
The administration is pouring a lot of money into domestic sectors it sees as strategically important. Defense, clean energy, the semiconductor business.
There's a lot of monies that are appropriated already that have a lot of legs on them for these industries.
That's Chris Blench, co-founder of Mavericks Manufacturing Partners in Escondido, California.
And so we're trying to position ourselves so that we can continue to benefit from all those monies that are allocated to those projects.
Blench started the company a few months ago to manufacture components for submarines and aircraft carriers, parts for wind turbines and desalination plants, and tools for semiconductor manufacturing. He's showing me a grinder that preps steel plates for welding. Other than a few welding machines, the room it's in is mostly empty. But Blench says that'll change pretty soon.
Like the 3D printer will be over there, the welding robots will be over here in this corner. We'll be making those investments once we can afford it.
Blench says he's sure he'll be able to, because the products his company is set up to make are sophisticated and expensive.
We're not making toasters. We're not making furniture. We are fabricating products that are very difficult to make.
Which is exactly the kind of manufacturing the Biden administration has been trying to encourage. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Thursday, traders were most definitely not feeling the love. We will have the details when we do the numbers. You got 80% of any given market, you're in a pretty good position, at least short term, which explains a lot of the action around the chipmaker NVIDIA. It announced blockbuster earnings yesterday, and as we covered earlier this week, it has become the breakout sensation of the AI boom, thanks to its advanced graphics processing units, GPUs, that are the key piece of hardware needed to train those complex AI models. 80% key, as I said a minute ago. That kind of concentration is great for NVIDIA and for its investors, but it's not all great, as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports.
It's not just that the entire AI industry is so reliant on one chip company. It's that that company is so reliant on one manufacturer that actually makes the chips, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC.
There's a problem in a lot of sectors where there is a dominant provider.
Daryl West, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, says, we've been here before.
The last few years have taught us how delicate our supply chain is. I mean, we've seen disruptions in a lot of different areas.
There were the toilet paper wars, the nurses wearing trash bags in lieu of PPE, and the computer chip shortage that made car shopping a competitive sport. Manufacturing processes have become both more specialized and geographically separated, says Ram Ganeshan, a business professor at the College of William and Mary.
It's sort of a division of labor, so to speak.
This can make production more efficient and easy to scale. And an increasingly global market, mediated by the internet, has created a winner-take-all dynamic in the business world, says Aswat Damodaran, a professor of finance at NYU.
I think it's the fact that there are fewer players in almost every business, so you worry more about any one of them getting into trouble.
You worry even more, he says, when that one is in Taiwan, where there are simmering geopolitical tensions with China. The U.S. is making investments, like the CHIPS and Science Act, to shore up domestic supply chains, but that could take years or even decades. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Public schools in this country got a $122 billion shot in the arm back in 2021 when Congress passed and President Biden signed the American Rescue Plan. It was the biggest one-time infusion of federal money into public education ever, and districts have been using it to renovate HVAC systems and hire staff and expand summer school offerings. But one time means one time, and the money has to be spent by September of 2024. So schools are going to have to make some hard choices in the coming year about what they keep and what they cut. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes has that one.
Summer school hasn't always equaled fun in the arithmetic of public education. I mean, who likes remedial reading and math lessons? Storm Lake Community School District in rural Iowa wanted to change that, so it used federal pandemic relief funds to expand summer school.
They can choose board games, they can choose Legos, they can choose computer science, cooking.
District Superintendent Stacy Cole says the number of students attending went from 60 to over 500. The programming costs the district $430,000 annually, and she's not sure what will happen once the federal funds run out.
If you have to pit that against, do we hire another 2 science teachers next year, or do we run half of the summer school? That's a big decision to make.
Lots of school leaders have big decisions to make as federal dollars expire, according to a survey out this week from the School Superintendents Association. More than half say they'll be forced to cut summer programming. They're also anticipating job cuts. Roland Toscano leads East Central Independent School District in San Antonio. He used federal money to hire tutors, classroom assistants, educators who could help kids with dyslexia. He's hoping the Texas legislature will step in with funds so he doesn't have to lay all those people off.
It's just stressful. It's disheartening. She's got a lot of restlessness about what's to come and how we're going to manage.
Other districts are pivoting, spending their last American Rescue Plan dollars on stuff instead of people. Curriculum, hardware, software, things they can use beyond the 2024 deadline. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Coming up,
this is a business based on passion.
That is really the only way to do it. First, though, let's do the numbers. Ooh, the Wawas. Ooh. All right, here you go. Dow Industrial's off 373, 1.1%, ended at 34,099. NASDAQ off 257 points, almost 1.9% there. There you go. Closed at 13,463. The S&P 500 shed 59 points, 1.3%, finished at 43.76. I guess it's bad that I'm surprised when we get the Wawas, right? Boeing dropped nearly 5% today after the plane maker reported manufacturing flaws in its 737 MAX airliners and announced that deliveries would be delayed. Spirit AeroSystems, which supplied the problem parts, tumbled more than 12%. T-Mobile US shed 2.2%. Today, the telecommunications firm announced plans to cut 5,000 jobs. That's about 7% of its workforce as it tries to reduce costs in the face of rising competition. Bond prices down. Yield on the 10-year T-note ticked up 4.24% on the 10-year. You're listening to Marketplace.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. I've got a page up on my computer here in the studio that's got some economic data on it, specifically exports for one specific unnamed country, broken down by commodity and category. $4.72 billion in total exports for this country. Diamonds are 19.5% of that total, the biggest share. Radioactive chemicals are second at 12.7%, raw copper at 11.3%, and so on down the list, all the way to recovered paper at 0.032% of total exports. My mission, should I choose to accept it, is to guess which country this is. I'm going to say right now that this particular edition of the game craze that is sweeping us fun economic and business types, Tradle it's called, seems a bit too easy, right? 19% of exports are diamonds. But that's why you play the game, to find out how good you are or are not. Tradle is obviously an homage to Wordle, but for trade, it's from OEC, the Observatory of Economic Complexity. Gilberto Garcia Vasquez is Datawheel's chief economist. That's the organization behind the OEC and Tradle. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let me ask you, first of all, have you played today's game yet?
I haven't. I was waiting for you.
I appreciate you waiting. All right. Do you have it up in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So I'm just going to say, as I said in the introduction, 19.5% of this country's $4 billion in exports being diamonds seems to be a giveaway, right?
Right. You have a big clue there.
All right, big clue. I'm going to go ahead and enter South Africa here as my first guess. And wow, okay, so South Africa is not the right answer. So the way this works is that you make your guess, it tells you how far off in kilometers you are, and then it gives you a compass direction to think about that you should make your second guess. So I should move to the northwest, 954 kilometers, give or take 500 miles. I do not, despite my producer's recommendation, I do not have a world map in front of me. So what's your guess? You're the trade expert.
It is on the coast, right? Because you see fish there.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. Sorry. Wait. This is great. I totally missed this. Fish fillets are 6.93% of this country's exports. Non-filleted frozen fish are 5.76%. Yeah, you're totally right.
Well, we should try, what about Namibia?
Namibia. All right. I'll give it a try. Boom. There we go. Namibia.
We did it.
We got it in. We got it in two, which is to say you got it in two. Well, first of all, thank you for helping me out. Second of all, since we want to do more than just play this game, you get now, I think, on average, 500,000 views on a month on this, please take no offense, this sort of geeky, dorky trade game. And I guess I wonder what you think the draw is. I mean, I know why I'm interested. I guess there's a bunch of people out there like you and me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We were very surprised by the response. We launched this in March 2022. it was a tricky time for world trade just after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So people were paying more attention to world trade. And I think the level of response that is right now higher than what you quoted is we're close to a million visits per month.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's just a reflection of how people are paying attention to that. And we're more conscious about how the world is connected and how world events, they come close to home. They affect you in every way.
Did you, is this the first version of the game? And did you pop this thing out and this was the version, or did you have to try a couple before you really got the popular version that we see today?
Yeah, no, we put it out very quickly, but then at some point we ran out of countries, right? We do have only 224 countries with trade data.
It is kind of limited. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So we thought we were very smart. So we said, okay, we also have at the OEC data from subnational entities like states in the US or provinces in China or prefectures in Japan.
Oh,
and then we
really
tried
hard
to do it about those, but players didn't like it.
Yeah, because it's hard. That's why.
It is hard. I mean, we had Texas, California, things like that. A lot of people picked Alaska very quickly. But if you are far, that's too specific.
Now, this is specifically exports. Did you all think of sort of other metrics? Did you think like imports or I don't even know what else it might be, but there are definitely different ways to slice global trade data.
Yes, definitely. We have thought about imports and it's more challenging, right? Because we can all think about what different places produce and they are famous for, right? For example, one of the countries that was more easily identified was Fiji. And this is because almost 40% of the exports is water. So people kind of like identify very quickly with Fiji water.
Oh.
But then when you're talking about imports, it's very difficult, right? Because, for example, a small island can be importing everything, but also a medium-sized country that needs those inputs to produce. So we're thinking about imports, but we're trying to do it in a way that is still challenging, but still rewarding if you get it right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you heard my excitement when we, by which I mean you, got today's right. We should say, and I'm just going to pull back the fourth wall here. We tried to do this yesterday. We had some technical problems, so we couldn't. But yesterday's Tradle was ridiculously difficult. It was a tiny little country, $7 million in exports, $7 million with an M dollars in exports, of which like 10% were mollusks. And let's just say I did not get it, even with my six guesses.
Me neither. You're not alone on that. Normally, two-thirds of games end on a win. But yeah, sometimes there are cases where very few players get it right. Yesterday was very difficult.
Yeah. It was. Well, today's was easier. Gilberto Garcia Vasquez, he's DataWheel's chief economist. That is the company behind OEC and Tradle. I will tell you, by the way, if you're curious, other exports from Namibia, zinc ore, 1.4%. Planes, helicopters, spacecraft, 5.68%. Beer, 1.4%. Mr. Garcia Vasquez, thanks for your time, sir. I really appreciate it. Fun to play with you.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
Data, as we know, is everything in this digital economy of ours. Information is power, after all. That's why it's interesting, shall we say, to hear that the television ratings people at Nielsen are going to start using viewing data from Amazon in their Thursday night football ratings. It's a first, this use of third-party data. Nielsen's historically used its own independent viewership figures. But as streaming becomes an increasingly popular way, and sometimes the only way, to watch everything from football to The Bachelorette, Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall looks at the changing ways that ratings data is collected and shared with advertisers.
In the entertainment biz, the research firm Nielsen hasn't just been a player.
It's the whole game.
NYU professor Charles Schreger.
Advertisers pay for eyeballs. And right now, and for many years, the only relevant measurement has been from Nielsen.
But as the way people watch TV has evolved past the television set, Nielsen's viewer counting methods haven't always kept up. And more data firms have entered the field to fill Nielsen's gaps, says media consultant Brad Adgate.
There's a lot of different players out there.
Nielsen mostly stuck by the rating system until, Schreger says, Amazon claimed their own viewership data was more accurate.
And Nielsen is agreeing with that.
If the Media Ratings Council approves this change, Kevin Tran with Morning Consult says it could boost revenue for streaming platforms with viewership higher than what Nielsen first captured.
It's not unlikely that we'll see other video streamers that have live events look to lobby for a similar agreement.
This could bring a new wave of data sharing for platforms that haven't always been so forthcoming, says Michael Pachter at Wedbush Securities.
It's a move toward overcoming Netflix's fear of transparency.
He also says it's good for writers, actors, and others making the content to better understand the reach of their programming. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
That old saying, what was old is new again, fits pretty well with pop culture right now. Vinyl's making a comeback, or if you're a real audiophile, it has been back. Fashion trends from the early 2000s are showing up again. And do not get me started on Hollywood. How old is Indiana Jones anyway? Point is, there's real money to be made from older styles and older tech. So for today's edition of our series, My Economy, a business owner blending the best of the old with the best of the new.
I'm David Silberkleit, and I'm the owner and the founder of a classic car company called BugEyeGuys.com. We have an 11,000 square foot Quonset hut that's been converted solely with the purpose of building, restoring, and selling parts for old British sports cars. So when we started the business of Bug Eye Guys in 2007, it was very, very simple. Our initial focus was really the Bug Eye Sprite. That's what got us into this industry. You know, this was my car. That's the car I had kept for so long through all the phases of my life. It's really exciting for us to be working with a car, any car, from like 1955 to 1967. It was sort of, in my humble opinion, a golden era of automobiles. We got better and better at enhancing the cars and making them safer, upgrading the systems, improving them. And from there, that just continued to grow. People started to request LED lighting to be more visible on modern roads. Lots of things, even three-point seat belts. Most of these cars came with no seat belts at all. Of late, we have started doing electrical conversions. You know, remove the gas engine, remove the internal combustion engine. You remove all of that and then put in an electric motor. And so the electric conversion space is definitely a growth opportunity for us. So we would keep upgrading and upgrading and improving drivability and making the cars wonderful to use to sell our product base in this little tiny sphere of the car industry is never a dull moment. The seven of us, every day we go into our building to build a sculpture, a living object that is unlike anything else you see on the road. And it's such a joy for me that it has worked so well. We have sold 393 of these little cars, you know, since 2007, and there seems to be no end in sight for us. This is a business based on passion, and we tend to attract other people who are very, very passionate about this automotive era and about this moment in history.
David Silberkleit there, owner of Bug Eye Guys in Brantford, Connecticut. Maybe you don't repair classic cars, but we do still want to hear what is going on. Tell us at marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, in which the day has finally arrived. It is August 24th today. Let me say that again, August 24th. And yet, a certain coffee store chain based in Seattle has seen fit to declare today Pumpkin Spice Latte Day. Said the company in its press release, the return of Starbucks Pumpkin Spice Latte marks the unofficial start of fall for many customers. No, it doesn't. But of course money talks. Saw this tidbit on Yahoo Finance that in the week following this day a year ago, there was a nearly 26% increase in store visits. And yes, in case it wasn't clear, this is indeed the hill I'm going to die on. No moment of economic context today. We're just going to let it sit with the pumpkin spice latte. Just cuz. John Buckley, John Gordon, Rick Card, Anthony Parker, Amanda Petra, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. Amir Bibawe is the managing editor. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.